So I gave out the course material for Canto 3, I gave that out on Monday night. Hands up if you didn't get it, and you are going to be coming to the course on a regular basis this year. And that's 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, so I need 4 copies. Okay, 4. So you need 2. Okay, so that's 5. Okay. So 5 copies.
I might have 5 copies here.
I have 4 copies here. So you move on. So I give you another one on Saturday.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone want to go to Saturday? Good.
Okay, so I can give one for Mohan. We'll be on.
So on Monday night, we went over some basics of how the course will operate this year, orientation lesson. The classes are now going to be taped every lesson now, and they'll be put onto the website, the Melbourne website, under the Bucky Bazaar subtitle. So you can listen to them. If you miss the classes, you can listen to them. So it's something which is new for this year, which we're doing. We also went over the classroom norms, right? What will be the norms for our class for this year? And we went over the Parivasa Sutra for the class for this year. Everyone can say that together 3 times. Okay, basically it means we all agree to be punctual. We all agree to be punctual. We all agree to be punctual. What time does the class start?
7:30.
What time does the class finish?
9:00.
Okay, so everyone will come at 7:30. Everyone will leave at 9:00. Right? For 1.5 hours, we will stay in this room. And anyone who knocks on the door late will not be allowed to leave. Except this person. Okay, so we're just talking about punctuality. Now the class begins at 7:30 and finishes at 9:00.
It's the wife's fault.
Is it? Okay, so there are no excuses for any of the students like that. Otherwise, I'll start coming late and then see how that works. It won't work anymore. So everyone has to come on time. And then the course will run very full of them. So that's just one agreement. Do we all agree with that?
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. Thank you very much.
What's that?
Do you agree? Do you have a choice?
No choice. Prabhupada is always punctual. Always. And this is Prabhupada's miracle. So there is no choice. Okay. If you want to be late, then you go and join the Indian rail system. Okay. And then you can do whatever you like. Okay, and then I gave homework for everyone on Monday night. Not that. You all had to memorize the 12 aims of Shastric study. Did everyone do that? Because I'm going to test you right now, so I hope that all of you did that. Okay. The 12 aims of Shastric study come under 3, what do you call them? Yeah, I know that. But what I'm saying, there's 3, what do you call those 3 things?
Acronyms.
Acronyms. 3 acronyms. CUP, FAITH, and MAS. First we have CUP. What does CUP say? K stands for?
Knowledge.
Knowledge. U stands for?
Understanding.
P stands for?
Application.
Second P stands for?
Education.
Excellent. Like that. Then we have FAITH. F stands for?
Faith.
Very good. A stands for? Very good. T stands for? Very good. E stands for? Very good. And then we have the third one, Mars. M stands for? A stands for?
Academic.
I lost a few on that one. Okay. Academic and moral integrity. Okay. R stands for?
Responsibility
for learning. And S stands for? Shastra Shaktus, and that one also has a subtitle, which is Realization. Like that. It's important to understand these 12 aims because when it comes to time for the examination, the closed book examination, The questions on the closed book examination are based on these aims. So if you have a fundamental understanding of these aims, it'll make it easier for you to understand the context in which the question is being asked and how to answer that question accordingly by that. So it's good to have that basic knowledge. So you can look at that again this week. Just refresh that in your memory. Okay, so tonight we will be covering cantos 1 and 2, an overview of the first and second canto, especially the second canto, just to refresh our memory, so that then we can go into the third canto and understand the context in which the third canto is being spoken. Otherwise, if we begin the third canto straight away, it may be a little difficult for devotees to understand the way the third canto is being presented and why it is being presented the way it is, how it begins. Because it begins in a very particular way, so we need to understand the basic context of that. Okay. So if we go back to the very beginning of the first canto, chapter 1 of the first canto is called? Yeah, this is going back about 2 years now. Okay, this is long-term memory. Right? Questions by the sages. Questions. So they ask 6 questions in the very first chapter of the Bhagavatam. The first 3 verses of the first canto, of the first chapter, are called the Mongol Acharan. And they define, the Mongol Acharan defines the objective of the entire work, like that. And it offers blessings, like that, and it offers obeisances, namaskar. Ashirvad, namaskar, and vastu nidesh. Yeah. So these are the way that the first 3 verses of the first canto begin, like that. They offer obeisances, they offer respects, and they define the objective of the entire book. Vastu nidesh means defining the objective. So Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is how the first canto begins, the first verse in fact. So the objective of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam is Vasudev, which means Krishna, the son of Vasudev. Om Namo Bhagavate. Bhagavan means the supreme personality of Godhead is Vasudev, or Lord Krishna himself. So the Srimad Bhagavatam from the very beginning defines who the objective of the entire book is. And then the first verse is divided into the Tathastha Lakshana and Swarup Lakshana. This means the primary subject matter and the secondary elements. The primary subject matter of the first verse of the Bhagavatam is, maybe someone can, the Swarup Lakshana of the first verse of the Bhagavatam is Param Satyam Dimihi. Param Satyam means the absolute truth. Who is? Well, Krishna. Param Satyam, the supreme truth. Dimihi means to meditate upon the supreme absolute truth. That who is? Lord Sri Krishna. Do you want to give me that key?
Yeah.
Okay. So the supreme absolute truth, who is? Lord Sri Krishna. Right? So this is defined within the very first verse. Like that. Also, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana are also mentioned within that first verse. It's hard to go into in detail. It's a whole class just to go into that first verse in detail. Then the second verse, Srila Vyasadeva gives more glorification of the Bhagavatam. And then in the third verse, he glorifies the speaker of the Bhagavatam, who is? Srila Shukadeva Goswami. Like that. So this is offering obeisances, giving blessings. Blessings are given by invoking the auspicious personalities within the text. Because someone may say, well, it doesn't sound like blessings are directly given. But just by invoking the memory of Vyasadeva or Shukadeva Goswami or Lord Krishna himself, then automatically blessings are being invoked in that way. And the definition of the entire book is given. Then, in the remainder of the chapter, 6 questions are asked by the sages. And these 6 questions will be explained or elaborated upon in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Especially in the first 3 chapters of the first canto, those 6 questions are answered within those first 3 chapters. But also they will be the subject matter of the entire work. So what are the first two questions which are asked by the sages? Yeah. What is the ultimate good for all people under all circumstances? And what is the essence of all scriptures? The sara means the essential. What is the essence of all scriptures? So these two questions are very similar. And the answer to those first two questions are given in text 5 to text 29 of the second chapter of the first canto, like that. Then, the second two questions, or you can say the second three questions are, or third, next three questions are.
Why did Krishna take the
birth from the womb of Devaki? Which means they're asking directly about Krishna himself, the original personality of Godhead, Swayam Bhagavan. Then, next question. About the guna avatars, right? And then the next question? About the lila avatars. So you'll see that virtually the remainder of the Srimad Bhagavatam is about Krishna himself directly, and about the lila avatars and the Purusha avatars. Right, the different incarnations of Krishna. You'll see through all the different cantos from now on, all the different incarnations are elaborated upon. Right? The guna avatars, the Purusha avatars, the avatars that create will be spoken about in cantos 3 and 4 in great detail. And then canto 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, many of the lila avatars will be elaborated upon in great detail also. So those are three questions are given. And then the final question that the sages ask of the six questions. Yeah. Where does religion and knowledge take shelter after Krishna has disappeared? Because Krishna has just left the earth, where will Dharma and Gyan, right, transcendental knowledge and religion, where will they be found now that Krishna has left the planet? So this is the question the sages ask. And this question is answered at the very end of the third chapter. Like that. In the last, say, verses 40, 41, 42, 43, like that. Of the, specifically 43, like that. Of the third chapter of the first canto. This is where the question is answered. Right? Now that Krishna has left the planet, Dharma and Gyan, transcendental knowledge, reside within Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. Just as the sun has set, right? Normally when the sun sets it will become dark. But when Krishna left and the sun set, instead of the world becoming dark, another sun arose simultaneously on the horizon. Right? And that was the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? And those who have lost their way in this dark age of Kali will find light from this Bhagavad Purana, from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is where people will find true religion and true knowledge within the age of Kali. Like, so the second chapter is called
Divinity and Divine Service.
Prabhupada said the second chapter of the first canto is so important we should memorize the entire second chapter. There are many, many, many important verses within the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, and virtually if you memorize many of those key verses, you can base your preaching of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness very much on those verses in the second chapter. They are the essential verses very much of the Bhagavatam and of our entire philosophy. So then, Savaipum Sampara Dharmu Yato Bhaktira Hopsija, these verses are given, principal verses. Dharma Swanish Dharapum Sam Shoksetu Gitayam. Like that. So very essential verses are given at this point in the Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam describes the elevation from Shraddha or faith, the beginning of spiritual life, up into prema, especially from verses 12 to 19 or 20. These verses are systematically describing the elevation of consciousness in devotional service, divinity and divine service, like that. And then in chapter 3, what is chapter 3 called?
Krishna
is the source of all incarnations. Right? So in this chapter, chapter 3, Srila Vyasadeva lists many, many incarnations of Krishna. Mm-hmm. Up until verse 26. And in verse 27 he says, there are as many incarnations practically as there are waves in the ocean. Right, or rivulets of water going into the ocean like that. You cannot count how many incarnations of the Lord there are, like that. But then in verse 28, this verse is called the Paribhasa Sutra. Paribhasa Sutra means a verse which will come somewhere in the beginning of a scripture, and this verse will be containing the truth which the entire scripture will be based upon. And any apparent contradiction within the remainder of the scripture can be reconciled by referencing back to the Paribhasa Sutra. Which means if you cannot understand what the Srimad Bhagavatam is speaking about, you simply go back to the canto 1, chapter 3, verse 28. Etecham sakalal punsa krishnas tu bhagavan swayam. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Right? This is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is talking about. Right? This is the governing verse of the Bhagavatam. So if someone cannot understand why the Bhagavatam is speaking as it is, you simply refer to this. It is in connection to Krishna. It's establishing that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many incarnations of God, but Krishnastu. Tu means but. Swayam Bhagavan, the original personality of Godhead is Krishna himself, right? Son of Vasudev, right? So this incarnation is the original personality of Godhead. So this verse is the Paribhasa Sutra. It governs the truth of the entire scripture. The entire scripture is meant to elaborate upon and support this particular truth of this particular Shastra. Right, so this is the Paribhasa Sutra for the Srimad Bhagavatam. So practically that is the essence of the entire Vedas in that one verse. Like that. So,
I thought the Paribhasa Sutra was in the second chapter, the 11th verse.
That is the Paribhasa Sutra for the Vedas. Brahmetmi. Paramahmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabjate. That is the Paribhasa Sutra, or the governing verse for all of the Vedas.
Okay.
That's the commentary which is given by our acharyas. But the Paribhasa Sutra for the Srimad Bhagavatam in particular is 1.3.28. And that verse surpasses even 1.2.11, which is the subject matter. Because the subject matter of the Vedas is Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan realization. But then when you come to Bhagavan realization, understanding Bhagavan in his most fullest display of his potency, that is Krishna. Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Okay. So that verse surpasses any of the other verses within the Vedas. Okay. So then in chapters 4, 5 and 6 of Canto 1, there is the conversation between Srila Vyasadeva and Sri Narada Muni. Chapter 4 is called The Appearance of Narada. Right? Chapter 5 is called Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam. And chapter 6 is called
Conversation between Narada and
Narada. Conversation between Vyasa and Narada. So, in these three chapters, Narada discloses his despondency to Srila Vyasadeva. He says that he is feeling incomplete even after seeing that Kali Yuga is about to begin. Vyasadeva, being a perfect rishi or a perfect sage, he has the potency of Tri Kala Gya, which means he can see past, present and future perfectly. So he saw that within Kali Yuga people would become so fallen that the oral tradition of the Vedas, in other words the Vedas being spoken in an oral tradition, being passed on from teacher to disciple, by word of mouth, that tradition would not remain complete or intact within Kali Yuga. Because people have short memories in Kali Yuga. They are short-lived, they are unfortunate, they are misguided, and beyond all, they are always disturbed, as the Bhagavatam said in the very beginning, in the first chapter. Yeah. So, because the Bhagavatam is saying that people are like that, then Srila Vyasadeva saw that he had to write the Vedas down. So he wrote all the Vedas down. Actually, Vyasadeva spoke the Vedas and Ganesh was writing. Ganesh was the scribe with his four arms. Right? And when two of his arms became tired from writing, just like in your exams, right? Then the other two arms came out and they took over. Right? And then when they retired, then the other two would write like that. So he just wrote on and on and on. And the entire Vedas were written down for the people of Kali Yuga. But then after writing all of the Vedas, still, Srila Vyasadeva was not feeling satisfied in heart. His work was not complete. He was not feeling that he had done everything he needed to do. So Sri Narad Muni appeared, his guru appeared at that time, and he looked at his face and he could see his despondency. And he said, "Is it that you have written a scripture which has not exclusively dealt with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his pure devotional service?" So at that time, Vyasadeva, in the beginning of chapter 7, he went into meditation. And we see in his meditation, he realized the absolute truth. He saw the Supreme Lord, he had darshan of the Lord, he had entered the perfect state of samadhi, and he had perfect realization of Krishna. So he became fully God conscious, and he saw the material energy next to Krishna. Because as Prabhupada points out in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, in the introduction, in the preface, he says that the Bhagavatam does not deal with God, it deals with the absolute truth. So this means God and his energies. Right? It means the spiritual energy, the material creation, the time element, like that, the jivas, right? The other incarnations of Krishna, and finally Krishna himself being the source of everything else. That is the absolute truth. That is the param satyam, dhimihi, which must be meditated upon. So he realized all of this, and then he was confident to write the Srimad Bhagavatam. So at this point in time, he wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. So what is chapter 7 called? The son of Drona, punished. So we see in that chapter, that is the first time we see Krishna himself appear within the Srimad Bhagavatam. And how do we see Krishna for the first time? Bhakta Vatsala, or Partha Sarathi. He is driving the chariot of Arjuna in pursuance of
Ashwatthama.
They're following after Ashwatthama. So, this is the first time we see Krishna as Bhakta Vatsala. And this Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, this quality of Krishna, is the supreme quality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That he is the protector of his devotees. This is the supreme quality of the Lord. Just like the story is given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita of the Brahmin who was in South India. And he was ordered by his guru to read the Bhagavad Gita every day. But he was illiterate. But every day he was just looking at the cover of the Bhagavad Gita and he was seeing the picture of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, driving the chariot of his devotee, Arjuna, and seeing how much affection that Krishna had for his devotee, Arjuna, and how much affection the devotee had for Krishna, this exchange of rasa between the devotee and Krishna, the bhakti ras, then he was crying tears of ecstasy. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw him, he said to him, "You have understood the Bhagavad Gita. This is what the Bhagavad Gita is about. Right? It is sarvadamam parijaja mama ikam sharanam braja. Right? Fully surrender unto me." Right? So this was the mood between Krishna and Arjuna. Krishna relishes this mood of serving his devotee, and the devotee relishes the mood of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the first time we see Krishna within the Srimad Bhagavatam, in this mood of serving his devotee. And this is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is about. Krishna's relationships with his devotees. Okay. So then, the remainder of the chapter describes different Vedic points in relation to how Ashwatthama was punished by Arjuna and the Pandavas and Lord Krishna. And then chapter 8 is the teachings of
Kunti.
Do you know how to put it on? You have to tie it around the back of the verse. So chapter 8 is the teachings of Queen Kunti. Right? Chapter 9 is passing away of Bhishma. Many, many important instructions within that chapter also. Chapter 10 is departure of Lord Krishna, but that he leaves Hastinapur. And the wives of the Kuru dynasty, they all go up to the roofs and they recite many wonderful prayers in glorification of Krishna. And chapter 11 is?
Krishna
enters into Dwarka. And how the Dwarka, the Dharmavasis, his own dynasty, how they receive him. Like that. Okay. Nice going. Can you make it like that? Most of the time? That's a good one. That's nice. So, how Krishna is received by the residents of Dwarka. And once again, the rasa, or the exchange of love, between the Supreme Lord and his eternal associates. This is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching us. Right? The prema, or the love, which is exchanged between the Lord and the Lord's eternal associates. Right? And this is what the Bhagavatam wants us to come to. This is what Krishna wants us to attain. This is the message of the Bhagavatam. Then in chapter 12, a different story begins to manifest. Like that. What is the chapter 12 called? Yeah, the birth of King of Parikshit. King Parikshit. So Lord Parikshit Maharaj appears like that, at that time within the 12th chapter. So Parikshit Maharaj appears, and chapter 12 begins. With Parikshit Maharaj appearing and the birth ceremony of Parikshit Maharaj and how the Brahmanas blessed him and so forth. And then in chapter 13, what is chapter 13? Dhritarashtra quits home. Right? So this chapter, particular chapter 13, where Dhritarashtra quits home, who comes back to Hastinapur after many, many years of absence? Vidura, right? Now this is very important for us to begin studying the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because the third canto is a conversation between Vidura and Maitreya, right? And the fourth canto also, canto 3 and canto 4, a conversation between Vidura and Maitreya, and it's very interesting, this particular conversation, extremely interesting. When we begin on Monday night, I'll begin to explain how this, actually where this conversation comes from. It's amazing where this conversation comes from. Yeah, we'll get to it. It's very amazing by the third canto. So what happens in the end of the second canto, the final three verses of the second canto, the sages of Naimisharanya, Sage Suta Goswami, please tell us about, you mentioned right back in, they didn't say chapter 13, but right back in chapter 13 of canto 1, they mention there was a conversation which took place between, or they mentioned that Vidura appeared at that particular time. Okay, like that. Harsha, you're welcome to come, but you have to come at 7:30.
Okay.
Like that, because this particular class, we have very punctual standards in this class, so you can come, but just make sure you come.
Okay. Sure.
You want a chair? Just say there's a chair here. So when Vidura comes in chapter 13, he comes back to Hastinapur, and Vidura had been away from Hastinapur for 30 years. And he had travelled all around India at that time, and then finally he comes back after 30 years, and he comes back for the single purpose of liberating his brother, who had fallen into deep Maya, Dhritarashtra. So he comes back and he preaches to Dhritarashtra and he awakens the spirit of Vairagya, or renunciation within his heart. And then he preaches to Dhritarashtra, please immediately leave home. You will leave this world very soon. You're very elderly now. Right? And now that your final years of life have come, you should dedicate your consciousness to realizing the absolute truth. So then he inspires him, and then Dhritarashtra leaves home. He quits home. That is the 13th chapter. So in the 12th chapter, it was mentioned the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, but in chapter 13, 14, and 15, the story slightly goes off in a tangent for three chapters, and then it comes back in chapter 16 like that. Then chapter 13, Dhritarashtra quits home, and then chapter 14, the disappearance of Lord Krishna, right? Arjuna comes back from Dwarka. Arjuna had been sent at this time by Yudhishthira to Dwarka to see how Krishna and the Yadavs were doing. Krishna and the Yadavs, as we'll find out at the beginning of the third canto, they had left this world. So this is how the story is tying in. From chapters 13, 14 and 15, back in the first canto, this is how the third canto is beginning, at that period. So Arjuna had been sent back to Dwarka to see how the Yadus and Krishna were faring, but they had left this world. So then he travelled back, and the 14th chapter he says to Yudhishthira Maharaj that they have left. Right? They have all gone now. Yeah, Krishna has gone, and the Yadu dynasty have also disappeared. They've wound up their worldly pastimes. So in chapter 15, what takes place? The Pandavas retire timely. Then they renounce. Right? They understand, okay, the mission is finished now. Narada has indicated to us that Krishna would soon leave. His mission is finished on this earth, so now we will also leave. Right? And then they install Parikshit Maharaj as the emperor of the earth, and then they all travel towards the Himalayas, and they all live this world in that way. So in the beginning of Canto 3, at the end of the very end of the second canto, the last three verses, the sages of Mount Nisharanya ask Suki Goswami, please tell us about Vidura. That he came back and he spoke to Dhritarashtra. Please tell us what happened in those 30 years when he was travelling. Please tell us about these pastimes. What took place? Vidura was a Mahatma, a great soul. He was actually an incarnation of Yamaraj. And Yamaraj is one of the 12 Mahajanas. So therefore he's a very, very great personality. Please tell us what took place. There must have been many significant events which took place in that. So that's where the third canto will begin. So that will tie in in due course of time. And then chapter 16. How Parikshit Maharaj receives the age of Kali. Like that. Chapter 17 and 18.
Punishment
is water color. And? Then Parikshit becomes cursed in chapter 18. So this is how Kali Yuga enters. Right? This is the history of how Kali Yuga began. When the Brahminical class, they fell from grace. When they lost their potency. When they cursed someone who was not worthy to be cursed. Right? Because one of the qualities of the Brahmanas is they must be tolerant. Right? Krishna says this within the Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter. He says the qualities of the Brahmana. What is the first one?
Peacefulness,
austerity, yeah. What is the Sanskrit?
Samo,
tapas, so sama means they must be equal. Right? The Brahmanas must be equal by quality. It means they must not become disturbed easily. So because he become easily disturbed, the Brahmana, then in that way Kali Yuga entered. Because the Brahmanas lost their qualification and they cursed the Kshatriyas, they cursed Parikshit Maharaj. So then Kali Yuga was allowed to enter. But actually, this was an arrangement by the Lord that this whole pastime would take place. Because when Parikshit Maharaj entered into the ashram world, Samika. When he entered into the ashram of Samika Rishi, he became bewildered by the Lord's Yogamaya potency. And because the sage was in a trance, he was in meditation, and he did not receive the king because he did not realize the king had entered his ashram. Then Parikshit Maharaj, he said, because you have not received me properly, I will give you a garland. So he picked up one snake, and he put the snake around his neck as a garland. Right? And he said, because you have not received me warmly, I will also give you a very cold reception. And then he left. And then the rishi came out of his trance, his meditation, and he saw that he had a snake upon him. Right? And then he thought, that's very peculiar. And then he meditated, and he could understand what had happened. And he felt very bad. Huh? So this was an arrangement by the Lord. Because Parikshit Maharaj would not have done that. Prabhupada comments at that point in time, in the purports. This was the Yogamaya potency. Parikshit Maharaj could not have acted like that normally. You know, he would never have acted in that way. But by the Lord's arrangement, he did. And then Sringi, the unqualified son of Samika, then he cursed Maharaj Parikshit to die within 7 days by the bite of a snake bird. And that's how Kali Yuga entered. That's how Parikshit Maharaj left this world, and that's how the Srimad Bhagavatam was allowed to be spoken. So the whole point was that it was the Lord's desire primarily that the Srimad Bhagavatam be spoken. So this is the history of how the Bhagavatam is coming into existence like that. And then in chapter 19 of the first canto is called? The appearance of Shukadeva Goswami. So Shukadeva Goswami then appears before Maharaj Pariksit.
Very good. You can come and sit on this side. Yeah, grab a seat. If you come on, sit on this side. Okay. If you come and sit on that, try to come on 7:30.
Okay.
Like that, because we have partial council.
So, chapter 19 is called Shukadeva Goswami. Appearance of Shukadeva Goswami. So he appears, the divine sage, right at that moment when Maharaj Pariksit renounces his kingdom and sits down to fast for 7 days and seven nights on the bank of the Ganges. Then right at that time, by the arrangement of the Lord, Shukadeva Goswami arrives there. So that the Srimad Bhagavatam can be spoken. Because the Bhagavatam needs to manifest within this world from the most qualified speaker to the most qualified listener of the Bhagavatam. So Pariksit Maharaj is the most perfect listener of the Bhagavatam, and Shukadeva Goswami is the most perfect speaker of the Bhagavatam. So this arrangement was made by the Lord so the Bhagavatam could manifest. So then the second canto begins. At the end of the first canto, then Pariksit Maharaj asks a question to Shukadeva Goswami. What is the question that he asks?
What is the duty of every human being at the time of death?
Yeah, what is the duty of every person at the time of death? But specifically, he says,
especially at the time.
In all circumstances and at the time of death.
Yeah, he says that. At all circumstances and the time of death. He said, what should one hear about, glorify, remember, and worship? Particularly at all times, but particularly at the time of death. Like that. So this is how the second canto begins. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shukadeva Goswami begins to speak. And then in verses 5 and 6, in verse 5 he says, Ante Narayana Smriti. No? That at the end of one's life, one should remember Narayana. No? Krishna, who is the source of Narayana. This should be the goal of everyone. Ante Narayana Smriti. We must live our lives in such a way that at the end of our life, we can fully fix our consciousness upon Krishna. That is the goal of Krishna consciousness. Okay. In the sixth verse, then he directly answers the question. He says that one should hear about, glorify, remember and worship Lord Sri Krishna, Vasudeva himself. Then he describes in verses 7 to 10 how he heard this, or he learned this message of the Bhagavatam from Srila Vyasadeva himself, his father. And he glorifies Mahapurushika, or he glorifies Maharaj Pariksit for being the most qualified hearer of the Bhagavatam. Someone who is very deeply interested in understanding the message of the Bhagavatam. This is the qualification to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. One must be eager. One must have great intense desire to hear the Bhagavatam. Right? This is the qualification to hear the Bhagavatam. Right? Not that we fall asleep, not that we our minds wander off on something else, but we are intensely, Prabhupada says, with rapt attention, eager to understand the Bhagavatam. That is the way that one must understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. Mahapurushika means that one is one must understand the inner moods and the inner meanings of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? And interesting, this Mahapurushika means one who wants to understand the Mahapurush. And Srila Prabhupada mentions this Mahapurush is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is indirectly mentioned within the Srimad Bhagavatam, within the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. And we understand that Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most confidential Chana avatar, hidden form of the Lord, who is a combined form of Radha and Krishna. So this is how deep the Bhagavatam is. Right? Very, very deep. There is a, if one can understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's moods in relation to his mood towards Krishna, then one will understand the most deepest moods and messages within the Srimad Bhagavatam itself. Right? So Pariksit Maharaj was eager to hear all of this, to understand all of this. And therefore, Shukadeva Goswami glorified him. You are the proper person to hear the Bhagavatam. Then in the 11th verse of the first chapter of the second canto, the Harinam Anukirtanam process is described. What is the first chapter of the second canto called? The first step in God realization. Now the first chapter of the second canon is called this first step in God realization for two reasons. Right? One reason is because the remainder of the chapter, from verse, say, 12, 13, 14, 15, verse 16, 17, like that, onwards to the end of the chapter, is describing realization of the Virat Rupa, form of the Lord. This is glorified by Shukadev Goswami. Why does he glorify the Virat Rupa, or the Virat Purush, this kind of realization? Because within the audience of the sages who are gathered to listen to this conversation, when Maharaj Pariksit and Shukadev Goswami are having this conversation and the Bhagavatam is being spoken, there are many sages who are present. But not all of the sages have the same level of realization. So because they don't all have the same level of realization, understanding this, Maharaj Pariksit and Shukadev Goswami, they wish to elevate the sages who are present. Some of them are Brahmavadis. Some of them are interested in impersonal realization of the Lord. So, in order to elevate the impersonalist to the personalistic understanding, he describes within that first chapter of the second canto the Virat Rupa, which is the most simplistic, or the beginning realization of a personalistic conception of God. Right? Krishna within the universal form, within the Virat Purush, within the Virat Rupa. So it is, as Prabhupada describes, it is a form of the Lord, but it is not an eternal form of the Lord, like his other forms, like Nisringadeva or Varaha or Krishna himself. It is not a Satchitananda form of the Lord, but it is a material form of the Lord. But the Lord enters within it and then becomes divinely empowered, but it is not eternal. It does not exist in the spiritual world, for example. So this, to elevate them from the beginning concept, of an impersonal concept, of understanding the Lord is not a person, then Shukadeva Goswami describes the Virat Rupa. So then they have something to meditate on, which will gradually elevate them to a personalistic concept of the Lord. So this is the reason why he gives that. But more importantly, the principal reason why the first chapter is called the first step in God realization is because in this 11th verse, he describes the process of Harinam Anukirtana, which means, Harinam means
chanting.
Nam means the names of Hari. Harinam. Harinam. Right? So the names of Hari. Anu Kirtana, to chant. Anu means to follow. So to begin chanting the holy names of the Lord, hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam, the Sankirtan process, this is the way, or the first step in God realization. This is how to begin to realize the absolute truth. And this is the process which is recommended by Shukadev Goswami in order to realize the absolute truth. We must hear and chant about Krishna. Harinam Anu Kirtanam. Anu means to follow our spiritual master, to follow the previous acharyas, to follow the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, and to follow the Pancha Tattva, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his eternal associates. We must learn to chant following in their footsteps. So in the beginning, this means to chant without offense, avoiding the Naam Aparads, the 10 offenses against the holy name, which are described within the Harinam Chintami, in the conversation between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Namacharya Haridas Thakur. Right? So we begin to chant without offense. And this will lead us to a higher level of chanting, chanting with greed, which means we begin to chant with great relish. And this will lead us to a very high level eventually, where we have to learn to chant feeling separation from Krishna. Right? As the six Goswamis of Vrindavan used to chant. Hey Radhe Prajite Chalalite, Hey Nanda Sudo Kuta. They would walk around Vrindavan, as described in divine madness, calling out, Hey Ra, Hey, Brajite, Chalalite, Lalita, Hey Nanda Suno, Hey Krishna, son of Nanda, Kuta, where are you? Where are you? Prabhupada said, this is the mood of chanting. This is the mood that we have to eventually come to. This is Harinam Anukirtana. This is the process of chanting. So this is mentioned by Shukadeva Goswami in the beginning of the second counter. Is the process of God realization, the first step in God realization, is what the Bhagavad Gita is teaching. You have to understand this verse, 2.1.11, you have to understand this verse if you want to understand the entire Bhagavad Gita. If somehow you miss the point of this verse, your study of the Bhagavad Gita will not be complete. You won't get to the end of the Bhagavad Gita and realize the Bhagavad Gita. You must understand what is the process of self-realization, which is being mentioned by Shukadeva Goswami in his book. Then the second chapter is called The Lord in the Heart. So the Lord in the Heart means Paramatma realization. So Paramatma realization is discussed within the second chapter of the second canto. And it is described, the process of going back to Godhead. I just have to drink some water with that, otherwise I'm going to pass out. Everybody have a break for 30 seconds, just chance some rounds or something. That's why these courses taught through the style of teaching called participatory learning. Because this first lesson, when I have to overdo the first, I have to speak for an hour and a half without stopping. And I feel like I was going to pass out. It's like just talking to him. Like, okay, where are we up to? Which canto? Second canto. Which chapter was that?
Second
canto. So the second chapter, right. What was the second chapter called?
The Lord in the
Heart. Lord in the Heart, okay. So, it was being mentioned, the realization of Paramatma, or specifically, it was being mentioned how the devotee can go back to Godhead through the gradual process. There are two ways, or there are two planets within this universe. Because there are millions of planets within this universe, but there are two planets in this universe that you can go back to the spiritual world from. One of them is Brahmaloka, right? The topmost planet within the universe, and the other one is? Yeah, but which planet specifically?
Earth,
this planet. So we're quite lucky. Out of millions of planets, we happen to be on the right one. Take advantage of it. Right? It's a great opportunity. If you miss this opportunity, if you go to another planet in your next life, you'll miss the opportunity. It's only this planet and Brahmaloka. And it's not easy to get to Brahmaloka. So take advantage of this opportunity. Right? So, it is described in the second chapter of the second canto, the Lord with the Heart, by the process of meditating on the Paramatma, the yogi gradually elevates his consciousness to the higher planets. He has to go all the way through the different planetary systems to approach Brahmaloka. Right? He has to go through Tapa, Maha, Jhana, Satchaloka, finally get to Brahmaloka. And then after getting to Brahmaloka and associating with Lord Brahma and his associates, at the end of Lord Brahma's life when the universe is dissolved, then at that time, if one is a pure Vaishnava in the association of Lord Brahma, you can go back to Godhead at that time. So Prabhupada mentions at the end of the second chapter is a very, very long process. It will take lifetimes. The same thing can be achieved in one lifetime on the earthly planet by following the process of Harinam Anukirtanam. Right? So this is more practical in this age of Kali, but for the fallen conditioned souls.
Can I ask one question?
Yeah.
The Christians, they say that people who are like Mother Teresa and other Christians who are very pious, they go to Brahmaloka and with Lord Brahma.
Brahmaloka? Prabhupada says they go to Swargaloka.
But they do not want enjoyment.
They're pious people, but the spirit of material sense enjoyment is not gone from the heart. But that, so Prabhupada said the Christians, generally, the pious Christians, they will go to Swargaloka. They'll go to the demigod planets.
They cannot go beyond that.
That's what Prabhupada says. But he doesn't say they go higher.
They go on, but if they are very good souls, then they can...
The demigods are very good souls.
Some people, like, they think that the other people are God and then they serve them. They think that they are Paramatma and they serve like that.
Yeah, but that's what Prabhupada said. He said the pious Christians will go to Swarga.
Not more than
that. That's as far as they will. So then, the process is mentioned, the Lord within the heart, you know, that process of Paramatma realization. And then the third chapter is called?
Pure
devotional service, a change in heart. This is it, this is important. What's in this third chapter is also essential in understanding the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the beginning of the third chapter, then in the first 9 verses, then it is described the Karma Kanda process of realization, worshipping the different demigods in order to elevate one's consciousness. So you can see that the impersonalists have been addressed, right? In other words, the jnanis have been addressed within chapter 1, the first step of God realization. The jnanis or the impersonalists, they should meditate in the Bharat Rupa. The jnanis have been addressed. In chapter 2, the yogis are addressed. And in chapter 3, the karmis are addressed. Right? So he describes how the karmis, they can worship different demigods in order to obtain different boons. But then he says, Akama Sava Kamo Vamoksha Kamo Dharidi, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, Purusheta? Yajeta Purushambhura. So he says that regardless whether you do not have the true desires, right, like the Jnanis, okay, whether you are desiring Mukti, like the Yogis, or whether you are full of desires like the Karmis, then in all circumstances you should meditate and worship Krishna. Tivrena Bhakti Yoga. Tivrena means intense devotional service. It is described like the way the Ganges flows towards the ocean, that kind of intensity, that kind of movement towards Krishna. Tivrena Bhakti Yoga, right, that kind of mood of going towards Krishna. That should be the mood of the devotee. Just one pointed and fixed upon Krishna. Unstoppable devotion. So regardless of what sort of background one has, one should worship Krishna. That is like the Sukadeva Goswami is giving like the summary of what is spoken in those first 3 chapters up to then. And then he says in the next verse, in the 11th verse, this is all made possible by association with pure devotees. By association with devotees, then you can begin the process of Bhakti Yoga. We'll see the Bhagavatam will teach us this again and again. And then, Shaunaka Rishi glorifies Suta Goswami, and, because the conversation is going between Parikshit and Shukadev, and then sometimes it goes back to the conversation between Suta Goswami and Shaunaka Rishi. As we described a long time ago, when Parikshit, when Shukadev spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj on the bank of the Ganga, or the Jamuna, at Hastinapur, at that time in the audience, Suta Goswami was sitting there as one of the sages. And Shukadev Goswami understood that he would later speak the Srimad Bhagavatam again, so he called him close. He said, come and sit close. Sit very close and listen very carefully. So Suta Goswami listened to the conversation between Shukadev and Parikshit, and then he meditated upon it for 230 years, right? And after 230 years of meditating upon that conversation, he had full realization of the Bhagavatam. And then he spoke to the sages of Naimisharanya 230 years later at Naimisharanya. So Shaunaka glorifies Suta Goswami, and he says that he gives many famous verses at that point in time. By the setting and the rising of the sun, everyone's life is diminished, except for those who are glorifying the Supreme Personality of God. There's many wonderful verses in that. Third chapter is wonderful, that third chapter of the second canon. And then he describes the process of sadhana bhakti. He said, what are the use of your eyes if they do not see the form of the Lord? They're just like the eyes of a peacock. What is the use of your ears if you don't hear about Krishna? You have ears like a frog. Sorry, like a snake. What is the use of your tongue if you don't speak about Krishna? You're just like the tongue of a frog. No? What are the use of your legs? They're just like tree stumps if they don't go to Krishna's temple. Right? So he just gives all these, this is bhakti yoga, this is sadhana bhakti. How to use all of the senses within the service of Rishikesh. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sivana Bhakti, Uchite. So this is the process he's giving. And then in the 24th verse, I believe, or the third chapter, then he gives the verse where he says, what is the use of your chanting the holy name of Krishna if when you chant, your heart does not melt in ecstasy? Just by chanting the holy name of Krishna, if tears do not come to your eyes when you chant, if your hairs do not stand on end and your body does not quiver, just by chanting, then your heart is steel framed. And why is our heart steel framed? Because of aparad, offences. So this verse, I think it's the 24th verse of that chapter, 24th, that verse is connected directly to Harinamana Kirtana. In other words, as Rupa Goswami teaches, the process of sadhana bhakti, which is given, right, in Harinamana Kirtana, this is the process of sadhana, and the sadhana bhakti which is spoken of in the third chapter, right, in relation to walking to the temple, using your eyes, using your ears, using all your senses to serve Krishna, which is the 64 items of devotional service which Rupa Goswami gives. All that sadhana is meant to lead to sadhya, or bhava bhakti, or perfection. Love for Krishna, ultimately prema. So this is the process of how to attain Krishna, which the Bhagavad Gita will teach us. To go from sadhana to bhava or prema bhakti. Like that, from practice to perfection. So this is the first three chapters. So this is pure devotional service, a change in heart. Like that. So it's essential to understand this message of the Bhagavad Gita. Now what takes place in the fourth chapter, what is the fourth chapter called?
The process of creation.
What takes place in the beginning of the fourth chapter, like that, if I pass out, then just throw water on my face. I'm going to start to feel challenged. Prabhupada actually says the material body is not suitable for devotional service. Material body, you need a spiritual body to do devotional service. The material body has too many limitations. Prabhupada says, the material body is limited, and the spiritual body is not limited. So it is better for devotional service. If I had a spiritual body, I could just keep talking. I'm starting to feel very challenged by that. So, it is said that in the fourth chapter, Parikshit Maharaj says to Shukadev Goswami, please describe the process of creation. Because in the beginning of the second chapter, right, the very first verse, then Shukadev Goswami mentions the process of creation, how Lord Brahma begins to create. In other words, he is intimating, or what's another word for it? Hinting?
Giving the lead.
Yeah, giving the lead, or what's another word?
Preempting.
Giving a clue, like that, giving a hint. He's intimating, and this must be other words also. What's that?
Inspiring,
yeah, like that. He's like giving a clue to Parikshit Maharaj, Shukadev Goswami, this is what he would like to speak about, the creation, like that. So he mentions something about it, and the beginning of the fourth chapter, then Parikshit Maharaj, he says, because the first class disciple must understand the mind of the spiritual master. Right? Second class disciple needs to be told, oh, do this, do that. Give them instructions all the time. The first class disciple knows what the guru wants. And before the guru asks for a particular thing, the first class disciple already has the arrangement ready for the satisfaction of the guru. So Parikshit Maharaj understands the mood of Shukadev Goswami, and he says to him, please tell us about the creation. Right? Now, why does he want to hear about the creation? Right? Because by hearing about the creation, it is very beneficial for conditioned souls to develop detachment from the material energy. This is called Sankhya or analysis. By analyzing the creation or the material energy, how the material world is created, what the material world is constituted about, of, and how it is matter, which is different or separate from spirit, right? Which is what the first verse of the Bhagavad Gita mentions to us, to differentiate between
illusion from reality.
Reality from illusion. In other words, matter from spirit.
Mm.
So by analyzing the creation, it allows us to become detached from the material world. So therefore, Parikshit says, please tell us about the creation. Like that. And basically, you'll see, when we study Canto 3, which is what we're about to begin studying on Monday, in Canto 3, the process of creation is described three times in the conversations between Maitreya and Vidura. Three times in the 33 chapters. Great. So it's very important for neophytes, which means those who are attached to the material world, to the bodily concept of life, it's very important to understand this process of creation to become detached. Before you can enter into the subject matter of the 10th canto and Krishna's spiritual pastimes, you must first become detached from the material world. Like that. Otherwise, you cannot enter with proper qualification into the pastimes of Krishna. Like so therefore, he says to him, you please give a description of the creation. And then, Sukadeva Goswami offers prayers in the remainder of the fourth chapter in order to pray to the Lord. He offers about 20 verses of prayers to pray to the Lord to please give him the potency to speak the Bhagavata, the next 11 cantos of the Bhagavata, which he's about to speak. In order to speak all this, then he needs to pray to the Lord to get empowerment. Just like any of us, whatever service we do, before we do the service, we have to pray to Krishna. Please, you give me the ability to do the service. Then you perform your service. You don't just go and worship the deities. First, before you begin deity worship, you begin to pray to the spiritual master. Before I worship Guru Raj every morning, I pray to Guru. We do Guru Puja, pray to Guru. Then, offer prayers to Prabhupada. Then, to the previous acharyas. Then, to Gauranga, right? To the Panchatattva. Then we approach Radha Krishna worship or Giri Raj worship like that. So you must pray, then you begin your service, any service we do. Before we chant our japa, we will chant Panchatattva mantra. Then we chant Maha mantra. This is the process. Then the fifth chapter is called? Process of creation. Sorry, yeah, the cause of all causes, like that. So in the fifth chapter, the description of Mahavishnu, right? And how Mahavishnu will begin to create the material world. In other words, the Sarga, right? Which is the first of the 10 subject matters of the Bhagavatam. Sarga Visarga Stanam Poshanam Utaya Manvanta Nishanukata Nirota Mukti Ashraya. So the first of the subject matters is called Sarga. Right, which means the principal creation. This is begun. It has begun to be described within the fifth chapter. How Krishna is the cause of all causes, like that. And then going to the sixth chapter, which is called chapter six. Purusha Shukti confirmed. Right. So in the sixth chapter, it is described. It goes into the process of the Visarga, or the secondary creation, like that. So now all of this is only described very briefly, like that. The principal creation, the Sarga and the Visarga, are only very briefly described in chapters 5 and 6 of the second canto. Only two chapters which briefly go over them. But in the third canto, it will be gone over in much more detail. That's why we didn't go into it deeply in the second canto, because it will be described in much more detail in the third canto. So in the third canto, we will go into it very deeply. As deep as we can, we will go into it like that. Then in the seventh chapter is called?
Schedule
incarnations with specific functions. Like that. So, the creation is mentioned, right? Chapters 5 and 6. This material world is created, right? And why is it created? What is the purpose of this material world being created? For the souls, the rebellious souls who leave Krishna's association by Kunta in Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world and come to this material world, they're trapped within this material world. So we can study the saga of the saga, the creation, and detach ourselves from this material world. But then, in the second chapter, the Leela avatars, or the incarnations of Krishna, are described. They enter into this material world every day of Lord Brahma. Right? If you look at Lord Brahma's lifetime, he lives for 100 years. And in these 100 years, there are 365 days in each year. Every day of Lord Brahma, Krishna appears in his original form every day. And the Srimad appears every day. And Varaha, they all come again and again and again. So if someone says, you know, where is Krishna? Why doesn't he come to this material world? He comes every day in this material world, repeatedly, hundreds of thousands of times. And the whole purpose of the Lord appearing in these different incarnations, the Leela avatars, within the material world, is to attract the minds of the conditioned souls. Once they become detached from the material energy, we become detached from the creation, we become detached from this material world, we must then become attached to the Supreme Lord. So therefore, he appears in different incarnations in order to attract us back home, back to Godhead.
But he doesn't appear in our planet every day. He appears in
Brahma,
right?
No, he comes on this earth every day.
He
doesn't come on our every day. Although at 12 o'clock I did think I'd see something.
Okay. He comes every day in Brahmaloka.
No, in Lord Brahma's day.
Yeah, that's Brahmaloka.
No, in Lord Brahma's day, in our universe. In this universe, on Earth, but in the day of Lord Brahma, he comes.
Every 4 billion years.
Well, you can say, because Krishna will come 100 times. No, 1,000 times in the day of Lord Brahma. A blackish incarnation will come, but one of those incarnations is the original form of the Lord. We'll explain this later.
Does he come from
only
on Earth or on other planets
too? Many planets, yeah. Okay. Just like he comes, says, Vamana Dev, that's not on Earth. And the Shrim Dev Prabhupada says it's not on Earth. So, like that. The 8th chapter is called?
Questions
by Maharaj Pariksit. The Maharaj Pariksit asked around about 50 questions in chapter 8 of the second canto, and these 50 questions will be the basis of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. He asked many, many, many interesting questions. And these questions will be what Shukadeva Goswami will speak about in the remainder of the cantos. In the 9th chapter, the 9th chapter is called Answers by Citing the Lord's Version. And this is a very important chapter in understanding the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, because in the 9th chapter, the chapter of Shloki of the Bhagavatam is spoken. Right? The 4 seed verses of the Bhagavatam are spoken. They are verses 33 to 36 of the 9th chapter. Now these 4 verses are spoken of, are spoken to Lord Brahma by Krishna himself at the beginning of the creation. And Lord Brahma hears these 4 verses, he then teaches them to Narada, and he says to his Narada, his son, his principal disciple, please expand them. And then Narada expands them into the 18,000 verses that we had, which are the Srimad Bhagavatam. So these 4 verses, they contain the absolute truth, the Chatur Shloki. And in those 4 verses, the entire Bhagavatam will be elaborated upon. The first verse covers the topic of Sambandha Jnana, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says the entire Vedic literatures can be divided into 3 subject matters: Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana Tattva. So the first verse, 33, describes Sambandha Jnana, right? The second verse describes Sambandha Vijnana. The third verse describes Prayojana, and it's called Sarahasya. The Sarahasya means the secret of the Vedas. The secret is?
Emotion.
Yeah, but specifically? Prema. It is Prema Bhakti. That is the... Not that. And the final verse describes Abhideya, Tadanga, the process. like that, which means 64 items of bhakti, like that. We could go right into detail on that, but we don't have time right now. And some of you were there last year when we went into detail, so hopefully you've got your notes. If anyone doesn't have notes, then ask your group leaders and hopefully they can give you some notes to describe it more deeply. So, that is the 9th chapter, and then the 10th chapter is called...
One question, Lord Krishna told the Chaturthi Bhagavatam to Brahmaji, and then Brahmaji told to, Narada to elaborate it, and he and Narada did in 18,000 verses. But we read before that in 7th chapter, 1st canto, that once they were meditated, and then that's how he wrote the Bhagavatam.
Yeah, so what he wrote was, the Bhagavatam is eternal. The Bhagavatam is eternal. It's an eternal scripture.
So if Narada had already written, why did he tell Vyasadeva to write it?
So Vyasadeva had it written in written form. Narada could speak it to Vyas, and then Vyas has written it down for us. Like that. Narada has elaborated it, but it doesn't mean he wrote it down. He just elaborated it. He taught it to Vyas, and Vyas had it written down.
But he had to meditate again.
He had to meditate to realize the knowledge, to get realization. Just like you can read the Bhagavatam, it doesn't mean you've realized it. So the 10th chapter is called? The Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. So those four Chaturthi verses are then divided into 10 subject matters. And those 10 subject matters are described in the first verse of the 10th chapter of the 2nd canto. Right? The 10 subject matters are Saga, Visarga, Stanam, Poshanam, Uttaya, Manvanta, Ishamukata, Nirota, Mukti, and Ashraya. So these 10 subject matters are coming from, or elaborated from the Chaturshloki, from those four verses. That's where the 10 subject matters come. And Prabhupada comments that all topics of discussion within the universe, especially those related to spiritual topics, or especially spiritual subject matter, any question we ask, right, in relation to devotional activities, spiritual activities, comes under those 10 categories. And that's what the Bhagavatam will elaborate upon, those 10 categories. So you need to memorize those 10, right, which are the first verse of the 10th chapter of the 2nd canto. You need to understand, because the rest of the Bhagavatam will be an elaboration of those 10 subject matters. And now at the very end of the 10th chapter of the 2nd canto, the last three verses, then the sages of Naimisharanya asked Suta Goswami about Vidura's travels and what he has learned, right, during those travels. What is it that Vidura has gone into, like that? In other words, they want to have an elaboration of what Vidura has understood or realized during those travels of those 30 years that he was away from Hastinapur. Because he came back to Dhritarashtra and he spoke to Dhritarashtra very deep philosophy. Right? So he'd obviously realized a great deal of things in those 30 years. So this will be where the third canto begins on Monday night. At that. So on Monday night, we'll go through verses 1 to 16 of the third canto. And we will cover how the Bhagavatam has begun from the end of the second canto, where the second canto is leading off and where the third canto will begin. And then the first three or four chapters of the third canto are describing the history of what took place and how Vidura and Maitreya met after Lord Krishna had left this planet. It's extremely interesting. Okay, so. Prajara Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai.
Cantos 1 and 2 ki
jai.
Canto 3 ki
jai.
Offering mine.